And Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, and RJ in the golden, gilded, chromed ivory tower of power.
Just picture that, boys and girls, what this must look like.
And how he looks down upon us and, you know, controls everything. But speaking of control, I know there are a bunch of you wandering around your cars and living rooms and back rooms and basements, you know, going fish, 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 fish. So next week, I think we'll play the whole song for people so okay. they can actually hear what the whole song sounds like. So I'll bring in a copy of it. It's from a 1970 or late 60s Elvin Bishop album. And he actually made a sequel to the song called Fishing Again. And that's Charlie Daniels playing fiddle on there. There was a lot of famous people on that song. And we're glad you enjoy it. And thank you all for listening, whether you're in the U.S., Canada, Northern, Southern, Western. We appreciate it a lot. Thank you. Let's see. I am, what do they say? You got to clap and you go, it's cold out there. There must be some fishing in the atmosphere. Yeah, it's cold, right?
I want what he's drinking.
Right?
No, I mean, right?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you woke up anyway.
It's going to be.
All right. So, I've been spending the last day or so, I've dug out my jackets and my boots, and I've got pants, long underwear, thermals, because it's going to be like 70 this week.
That's right. Yeah, it's
gonna
quite
be pretty
cool.
Chilly.
I'm looking for my earmuffs and my gloves.
I'm covering all the pipes that are outside.
Well, you know, it's going to be 70. Yeah. This is going to get cold.
Yep.
I am not sure how South Florida is going to survive.
I have no idea.
But
I'm going to be bundled up like Nanook from the north.
Yeah, Nanook of Charlotte Harbor, where, you know, we actually got one night it's going to be like in the 50s.
Yeah, supposedly.
Yeah, that night the fish will be wearing little mittens on their front fins.
Yeah, they're going to have mittens on something, that's for sure. This is going to get cold. It's like 17 degrees in Wisconsin Rapids, and if you're in Montana, it's 4,200 degrees below zero. But those are kiddie numbers. It's going to be like 50 here. Come on, bundle up, grow a pair. You live in Montana, 4,200 degrees below zero should be nothing. You know, if you're in North Dakota, why even bother salting the roads? It's just going to blow over again. Close them down for a while. You'll get over it.
Yeah. Where do you go with that?
But
this message was brought to you by the Florida Board of Tourism.
Yeah.
Right.
All I can say is that I would rather live in paradise and go vacation up there. If I want to see snow, I can just pop up north, go see some snow, turn around, come back.
Yeah. That's true.
You know, this is that paradise-type fishing. We have rivers, ponds, lakes, and speaking of which, with this cold breezes coming across, our fish are so susceptible to this. And up north, you always think about spawning time. Once you get north of I-4, and literally, I-4 is the dividing line. We're actually so far south, we're back part of the north again. But north of I-4, fish spawn in the springtime. They go on beds in the springtime after it's been cold.
Yeah.
But here we're so far south that as soon as it starts, you get a chill blows across the water. Fish goes, oh my God, it's time to get together. Let's, start spawning. And we can have fish spawning like November, December, January, and it ranges up and down the state because Florida's long. I mean, hundreds of miles long. So you can have fish spawning in Punta Gorda, but not yet spawning in Northport. And
we're talking about largemouth bass.
Largemouth bass, freshwater fish.
Okay.
Yeah, just to clarify this, I am speaking of freshwater. I say freshwater. I'm in the freshwater zone. All right, but you get different lakes all around the state spawning at different times. And so the bass, the bluegills, the shellcrackers, the cichlids, the whatever, the whatever, the whatever, all these fish are starting. As soon as we get that chill goes across the water, that's the key for them to spawn, because they know by the time the fry hatch, it's warm again, they'll be good.
Yeah, well, that's about true. And sometimes even when it's, you know, you get these big cold fronts and it warms back up and then big cold fronts again, you can actually get sometimes a bass will even double spawn, or in a rare case, a triple spawn.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think one of the big things people don't realize, there's a big difference between the pre-spawn and the bass on the beds.
Oh, a lot of people don't realize the difference.
It's huge. When bass go on the beds, now, if you walk down to the edge of a lake and you see a whole bunch of moon craters down there, chances are those are bluegills.
Bluegills or tilapia.
Or tilapia. They're the most visible ones. The bass hide their beds a little bit better. But if you physically see the bass, there's one way to fish them while they're on the beds. But the pre-spawn, now picture this. This is, you know, you go out to dinner, then you go to hit the club. Right?
Yeah.
You're going out to dinner. You have a nice time, you know. You get a nice meal, and then you go out and you're dancing and drinking, and then later on that night, everything happens. Well, that's...
Hopefully.
Well, either that or, you know, whatever. But, well, you got to rain on my parade. I'm sitting here, you know, enjoying the visuals, and you got to rain on my parade?
Yeah.
What's this? Are we married now or what?
Sometimes.
Yeah, I get that. Because I'm having such a good day. What are you doing? Okay. All right. But, so the pre-spawn is when they love shiners, bait fish. They go after pretty much anything that moves. They got to bulk up. They got to get some fat reserves. Well, they're going to go through some strenuous activity. And then they're going to hang out and protect that nest. They're going to protect that bed. And they're not going to be able to feed. They're going to be able to feed a little bit. But one or the other, usually the male, is going to hang around that nest, right?
Yeah.
So this could be days or weeks of not steady eating. And so they know they got to get big and bulked up, have some fat reserves so that, you know, they can make it through this time. So as soon as this cold starts creeping across, now if you're north of I-4, like most of you are, you're going to, as soon as the warm wind starts blowing, you get those warmer temperatures. Bass go, okay, we got to get this done. You know, it's going to be summer. We got to, you know, get our eggs done and get the babies out before it gets freezing again. But down here, it's different. So we get that little chill off. They're going to start feeding on shiners real good. Time to throw crankbaits. Stuff moving fast. You know, work those fish up. And you're going to get bunches of fish all grouping together. Either several individuals up to 50 fish all in a wad. And they're going to be chasing schools of bait. They're not going to be doing on the bottom things.
No, they're going to be... Well, they're going to be all over the place, really, because they are going to be going into that major feed, chasing everything that you can imagine.
So, whatever you're doing, first rule is pre-spawn, I want to throw crankbaits. The original Rapala 9 would be a real good one, or a 7. Smaller baits, because there's not a lot of big food out there. They're going to be chasing a lot more smaller fish. So if you're looking for those bigger ones, a little deeper, larger lure, you can find those bigger fish. But for the most part, what I want to do is get a smaller crankbait, an original Rapala 7, a 9, maybe even an 11. But I'm going to be throwing that through the water. Now, if for some reason we don't have that pre-spawn school up going on, then you're going to drop back down, work across the bottom, because maybe they haven't started yet. But once those fish get on the beds, you know, they've fed up, okay, they paired up, and now they're on the bed. This is a whole different ballgame. No more crankbaits. They're, if you put one real, real slow across the top of them while they're laying there, maybe. But usually they're fairly shallow.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to, it's going to take a lot to get them to hit a crankbait. So what I'm going to do is switch to lizards. And I'm trying to get this information out before they're doing it. So you've got some time to prep. Now, I'm going to go back to monofilament on the rod. I'm going to take the braid off. The braid is not bad, but we're talking about a stationary fish sitting on probably about an 18-inch bed. So that line coming down, I don't want it. I want to go back to monofilament. You can use a spinner or a bait caster for this. And it may be easier with a spinning rod because I want it to drop, and I need it to drop straight down. I don't want it coming back to me at all. One of the problems with a bait caster is when you put your thumb on the spool to stop it, if you have 4 feet of water, it can come back to you quite a bit. If you make that perfect cast, you drop it about 5 feet the other side of the nest. Now, I don't want to cast right into the nest. And that's another reason I want mono, because I'm usually casting past the nest. So I want my lizard, I've got it rigged Texas style. I put a bullet weight on the line, let it free slide. Now I'm going to tie my hook on, and then I'm going to weedless a Zoom lizard, a Strike King lizard. But I want that lizard on there, and I want the weight to slide because I'm casting about 5 feet beyond it. Now, once I get there, I'm going to pop that rod tip up. I want that lizard to kind of come up off the bottom. The bullet weight will separate away from the lizard a little bit. It will fall to the bottom, and allowing that lizard to fall much slower after that. So it kind of like it's swimming down, like it's going after the weight. Picture it thinks the weight is food, and as you pop it up, the weight comes up your line a little bit, it falls to the bottom quick, and then the lizard slowly comes down after that. Now, in this scenario, we can actually see the bed with the bass on it. And this is critical for, you know, making what I'm talking about work. So I'm going to hop it a little bit. I'm going to drag it across the bottom. I'm going to do a couple of hops on my way to the nest. Now, once I see the border of the nest, and we're picturing a moon crater in your head is bass nest. So I'm going to pop it up, get it over the edge and into the right in the middle of the nest. Now I'm going to leave it alone. And what's going to happen is that bass is going to back away because something just jumped into its nest. So it's going to back away. Now the gills on the bass at this point should start to flare out. He'll put his gills out as far as they can, making that fish look as big and scary as possible. So the gills go flaring way out, and they might roll to the right or to the left. They're going to be rolling, you know, they're laying there upright looking at this lizard. Then the gills come way out, then they start rolling side to side. They want to be scary looking. They want to scare that lizard out of their nest. So they're doing that rolling around thing. And what you want to do at that point is just shake your rod. You do not want to move that lizard. You just want to shake it. Make it look like it's kind of grubbing around looking for some food. And again, with the clear mono coming down, they're not noticing any line, anything else. They're just fixed on that lizard. So now they've seen that lizard. It shook. It's digging around trying to find their eggs. It's going to eat their eggs. So that bass will zoom in, pow, he hits that lizard. Don't touch the lizard. Don't shake it, don't move it, don't even consider that there's even a lizard there. Forget it, because the bass needs to understand that he killed it. He hit it real hard. Like if it was me or you, we'd punch it in the head, but he doesn't have can't make a fist with his fin. So he's got to hit it with his mouth. And if you set the hook at that point, you missed him. It's too quick. You're never going to be on time for it. So let it sit. Let it play dead. Perfectly still. Now that bass is going to go up to the lizard. He's looking at that lizard and he's taking his time and he's going up. He wants to make sure it's dead. Now once he's sure it's dead, he's going to pick it up in his mouth and he's going to start to move off. Set the hook. Put the boots to him. You got him.
Okay.
That's the secret to it.
No, that's true. I mean,
did I miss anything?
No.
Okay.
About as detailed of a description as you can get when fishing when trying to catch fish on a bed, because they are going out there to move anything out of there. I've actually seen them move twigs off of their bed that have drifted down. But when it comes to mimicking something that's trying to attack their bait fish, you've
attract
got to do
their eggs
or attack their eggs or even their small fry, because they do protect their fry while they're still small right after they hatch for a little bit.
And after that, they eat them. It's like alligators. They're way smarter than humans.
They eat their young.
Okay, you're this big. You need to go. Start your own life. Get a job. You know, you can't live in the basement. If not, we're going to eat you.
Exactly.
Gators, bass, you know, they protect them. They take real good care of them. But this is your cue. Okay, you're out of school now. Go get a job. Get out of here. If not, you're lunch.
Right. And that's, you know, that's why lizards.
Isn't it hard
and
to believe most people aren't as smart as a fish? RJ's just looking at me going, you didn't say that, did you?
Fortunately, most people don't eat their teenagers. Most don't eat.
Fortunately?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll go with that. I believe you. It's fortunate. Yeah.
Fortunate for the teenagers.
I'm not sure who it's fortunate for, but I'm sure it's fortunate for somebody. I'm positive it's a good thing we don't eat our teenagers. Yes, that's got to be a good thing. Okay.
Yeah, but it's really cool because you can actually see how that fish will move back and forth. And the reason why it's flaring out its gills and rotating side to side, it's definitely trying to scare that thing away because it really doesn't want to eat it. Yeah, it's trying to intimidate. It's giving itself a bigger.
Watch two guys in the bar when they go up. And the one goes up, puts his chest up, sticks his arms out, you know, I'm big and bad.
Right.
And then the little guy whacks him in the head and he falls down. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. But that's all they're doing is just trying to be protective of their young and get that thing to leave. And if it doesn't, that's when they got to whack it. And all they're going to do is move it.
So, but if you try and do anything before the fish picks it up and goes to move it, you got to start all over from the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes.
And that's a lot to go through.
Well, and sometimes, you know, even changing things up just a little bit. Let's say that lizard doesn't quite get their attention sitting there. Take it and switch it over to a worm real quick, or cut that lizard in half and go to something even just a little bit smaller, because sometimes they get picky at times. I mean, I used to catch this one bass 3 years in a row. I caught it on the same bed when I was a little kid out in Arizona, because they're all man-made lakes, so you got limited areas to fish. And this one fish would always bed in this one corner by a boat ramp, and I would throw a lizard because that was one of my most favorite things to throw. But this fish would sometimes go up to it and just kind of look at it and just sit there and just stare. Would never touch it, never try to move it, anything. I'd reel it in, and one day I realized that it was kind of beat up because I hooked a couple other bass on it before. The nose was all chewed up and everything else. So I went to switch it out. I was out of lizards. I put on a small, this was a 6-inch lizard, I think it was, and I put over a 4-inch worm that I had and pitched it back out there. As soon as I got it right into the bed, the fish swam right up to it, sat there for a second, nosed it, and then thumped it, and then backed off for only half a second, and then picked it right back up and started to swim away with it. It was almost instantaneous. It wanted it out of there. So I started playing with that a couple times more, because I've caught that fish several times each year on the spawn, just see experimenting with different lures and baits to see what would happen. And there were times where it definitely distinctly recognized a smaller bait or a longer bait or a ribbon tail or a straight tail. It was kind of weird.
I would go to probably some creature baits as well. They got a lot of ones that look like bugs, but they got the two things coming off the back, and they're just, you can get some pretty crazy shapes in bass fishing.
Absolutely. But
I would, if they're not going after the lizard shape, I would go to something distinctly different.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? A radically different color, radically different shape.
Yeah. I've had good luck with crayfish-style lures on when the bass are on their beds, because the crayfish are eaters of bass fry and bass eggs.
I think
that the bass is going to look at it. This is definitely a predator. I don't have to make any decision as to what it is.
I like that Strike King Rage Craw.
Yes.
Because it's the claws have a little flat edge, which if you move it at all, you get really nice action out of it.
Right.
So I can go super, super slow compared to almost any other one I use. And when I'm working the bed, I want a lot of activity with very little forward motion.
Right.
So I can, you know, just lift it up a little bit, let it drop, and then get a lot of action out of the claws on it. I don't know why I keep wanting to say fins.
Well, and that's kind of...
I'm preconditioned. Now, I have this thing. I've been laying on the couch. I just keep dreaming fins. I don't know what it's about. Okay.
Well,
I just had to get it out of my system.
It's supposed to look like claws, but it simulates kind of the movement like fins, so I can see
so
the
confusion.
So
you're trying to make me feel better now. You're trying to placate me like it's okay, Fred.
Notice I didn't say anything.
You're all right, buddy. Don't worry. It'll be better.
It might be. It just might be.
Oh, it's nice when they look after you when you get old and feeble, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Let's see. A little bit about the local area here. We've got snook where?
Just about everywhere, to be honest. It's
one
been,
of the best snook seasons we've ever had.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable the amount of snook that are along the ICW that I'm hearing reports from Pine Island all the way up to even into Sarasota Bay. And then Turtle Bay, Bull Bay, the East Wall, the West Wall. And they were moving for a little bit with that last little kind of stalled out cold front that we had, but now they're just kind of scattered up underneath the bushes. Some are out on the flats, out in the open water. You know, it's been unbelievable fishing.
And if you hear about red tide reports, right now, I talked to a guy this morning in Boca Grande Pass, red tide, there was none. No red tide in Boca Grande Pass. There was no red tide up by, where was that, Casperson's?
Casperson's, there was none.
There's none by Casperson.
Is it Venice Beach had the concentration?
Yeah.
North of it by the jetties, there's actually some. Yeah. But at Casperson's, he was at Casperson's and found a couple of dead fish floating and just occasionally got a little tickle. But when he said the fishing was kind of bad, he caught a couple catfish and like one whiting or something. So he moved up to the jetties. He was only able to stay there for about 10 minutes because he said it was rolling and tickling his throat, burning his eyes and stuff. So he's the reports have been super scattered, and you know I've been telling people all day long because a gentleman asked this morning if there was a website that you could go to, and there is, but nothing is up to date like at that specific minute.
And the problem with it is red tide wants to float, blows around with the wind, it wants to stay on the surface. You can actually have a pretty bad red tide in 18 inches of water and have live fish swimming around underneath it.
Right.
If it's a calm day, it doesn't get in the water and kill the fish. It will affect you more than it will affect the fish. It's when we get some waves chopping it up, mixing it up.
Right.
And then it'll get down and actually kill more fish.
Yeah, it wants to stay right on top of the surface as much as possible. So, you know, the good news is that it's not concentrated in really heavy spots. Bad news is you just don't know where it's going to be. You have to just go find out where it's at. If it happens to be at that spot where you're at, move 100 yards. Guys are literally moving 100 yards and catching a ridiculous amount of fish. And then tide changes, wind changes, pushes them out. It's not killing the fish too much. Yes, there is some fish kills out there, but there's not an exorbitant amount. But the main thing is that you're just going to have to go and find each spot and don't be set on putting out, like Frank's always said, your mailbox. You're not stuck there in that spot, whether you drove there or went by boat. Move.
If you walk out on a pier and the red tide comes in, go to another pier. It's not rocket science.
Right.
You know? Gee whiz. This is my throat scratching. I don't like it here. I guess I better stay here just to, you know, I'm not catching any fish and this really sucks. Let me just hang out here all day.
Right.
Really?
Isn't this more like the normal natural, I guess I'm not using the right words, but this is kind of what we saw red tide do traditionally. You get it
for the last
places.
35 years I've been in business.
You get it here, it moves. You get a small amount here, you get a small fish kill. I think what happened last year might have been, you know, an anomaly to all of that. But
no, every few years we get a pretty bad one. Yeah. But it's more common for us to have red tide than not have red tide.
Yes.
In some amounts or some forms. But the number one problem, number one thing, most people, especially our visitors, and it's not your fault. It's like, have you ever smelled a skunk? Once you smell a skunk and somebody said, that's a skunk, you know what that is. But if you walk down to the water and just smell something bad, people say, oh, it's red tide. What kind of mental midget does that? If you don't know what the smell is, don't just assume. We know what assume means, right?
Exactly.
So, when you go down to the water, it's not uncommon for our water to have a methane smell, which is kind of like rotten eggs.
Sulfur, kind of. Yeah.
Especially if you get a real low tide, it takes the surface pressure off the bottom and allows methane to bubble up. You get that in Canada, the continental U.S., you get it down in South Florida, methane bubbles. It's from the leaves and decaying vegetation, even decaying animals. They leave methane. It bubbles up. I mean, people, you know, heat their houses with that stuff. And it's what pigs let go. So, you know, that drops out of the south end of a hog when he's northbound. But when you're out there, it's not even uncommon to have kind of a dead fish smell every once in a while.
Yeah.
Well, especially the low tide smell. You know, you got all this seaweed and algae and everything else now being exposed to the sun, and it smells.
And it can actually be pretty horrible. We think of walking to the beach as this pristine, wonderful, sandy, white sands and beautiful scenery and the salt air. Then the next thing you know, it's like, my God, what's that?
Yeah, but even then, even if you want to explain it to people who've been anywhere traveling to any of the oceans, let's say the Atlantic or the Pacific and the Gulf, every one of them have a very much different smell to them.
A very much different smell.
Completely. I mean, the Gulf of Mexico, when you approach the beach,
Robert is usually the one, you know, who's like the most spot on, but it's very much different. Okay, go ahead.
The Gulf.
Don't say radically different. You'll disappoint me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Completely different. The Gulf, you go to Boca Grande and smell the ocean or the Gulf spraying into
the salt water,
the air. You go over to West Palm and smell the Atlantic. It's got a completely different smell to it. You go to Maine, it's got its own distinct smell. As you're getting closer to the seaboard, you can smell that smell, and it's got a distinct odor, just like you're talking about that skunk. You can smell it from a long ways away. It's a completely different smell. So for people to come down here and assume that
every time they smell something bad, it's red tide.
Yes.
That's my point. No matter what it is, if they smell the skunk on the side of the road, oh, my God, the red tide's going to kill me. There is only one way to know if you're smelling red tide. Only one way. Does your throat, do you start to go, you start hearing that, you start hearing, you're in red tide. Mm-hmm. If you're not coughing, if your throat isn't ticklish, if you're not clearing your throat, you are not in red tide. You're just smelling something bad. And if the water is brown or with a red tint in it, The red tide we have in the Gulf waters is almost never red.
No.
It might have some brown or gray or whatever. You might not even be able to see it. It could look like dust. But that it's the water looks red, well, that could be tannic acid from the leaves. It could be anything. If you are not, if your throat is not scratchy, if you are not coughing, that's a bad smell. But it has nothing to do with red tide.
No, that's true. No, absolutely.
I'm just being emphatic because I get so tired of people saying, oh, I saw the water was red and we got red tide here. I'm like, no, that's the river. It turns red when leaves run down there, you know.
Well, and then they also had that distinct argument of, well, I smelt it. And it's like, you can't. I mean, the average distance of pretty good red tide will travel by air is 2 miles, and that's on a really extremely good day.
I've been a few feet from it and didn't know it was there, and all of a sudden it blew in.
Right,
but we had no clue it was coming, and we were downwind from, and it came from upwind of us, and we didn't know it. And all of a sudden we're all like, and start coughing, and you're like, oh my god. Man, when did red tide get here? It literally happens in a few minutes.
Yeah.
And it can go away just that fast. You could be sitting there, and you go out to the beach, and on a relatively breezy day, and the red tide can come and go in a matter of minutes or a matter of hours. But it could be literally a matter of a few minutes.
Well, and speaking of the breezy day, you got the cold front coming. The winds are going to shift and become predominantly out of the east, northeast. That's going to push a lot of this red tide, hopefully, offshore.
Out into the
further coast. Away. It can even break it up into smaller, tinier patches that will dissipate it where the
or it
could fade
away.
Or
it can make it horribly bad and we can all die.
Sure.
But, RJ, I'm bored with the red tide thing, but one last thing. Do you know of any other way besides coughing to tell if there's red tide?
Coughing and your eyes burn.
That's it.
That's it. And bad smells generally don't get both of those things to happen at the same time. So, you know, sulfury smell will make your eyes water, but you won't cough.
It's the coughing to me that's always
it's the coughing that really is. You're in red tide if you're starting to cough out of nowhere.
Yeah. To me, that's the only thing. So just so you know, because you're going to come to Florida and we want you to come here, we want you to visit here, the fishing right now is actually really, really good. And that's what I want to get into because I was like really bored with the red tide thing. Let's see. Redfish, east and west side.
Same as the snook. They're everywhere. I mean, people are catching. There's not a lot of really big ones around anymore. There's still a couple here and there that I'm hearing about 30-inch range. But the majority of fish are like from, say, 16 inches up to 25, 26 inches. East wall, west wall, Matlachet. There is one school that I've been hearing rumors about from a couple different people down by Matlachet, but I haven't seen any pictures of them yet to verify that it's actually the school of bull reds.
It's an unverified rumor that could possibly be true, but not definitely so. But we think at any moment we're going to get verification on this.
Exactly.
Stay tuned, you know. All right. Top water lures, paddle tails, shrimp, white bait.
Yeah, I mean, they're just because the water temperature's been so warm and there's so many bait fish out there. The fish are feeding on just about everything. I mean, they're trying to build up that fat reserve. They're anticipating it getting cold. So they're gobbling up just about everything. So even if you can't throw a cast net to try to get some white bait, take some shrimp with you or take some artificials with you. You know, don't miss the best part of the fishing in the early morning because you're sitting there screwing around for 2 hours trying to catch bait fish.
I've been out with guys who do 5 and 6 hours.
But you know what I'm saying, you know, so it's...
I would say that Rapala balsa wood lure, mm-hmm. You know, that little... I forget what
balsa Extreme.
Balsa Extreme. That little one, that would have to be bad. I mean, amazing with the redfish right now.
Probably.
I would say that, the Yozuri 3D Fingerling, and the AY. Those would be the two I would definitely want to have with me right now.
Right.
The Balsa Extreme, I mean, it looks exactly like a whitebait.
Yeah.
And then maybe a Mirror Lure MR17 or...
See, that's the one I would be going with. It would be the Meridine.
That Rapala twin hook one, the single hooks on it. I forget the name of it.
But the mullet.
Yeah, I mean, it's the it's not a mullet. It says mullet on the package. It's a stupid name. I mean, they're wonderful people, but chimney crickets, guys. Why would you call something that looks like a whitebait a mullet? I guess because you live in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Okay. But the new smaller version.
Oh, yeah.
That's bad. I mean, the bigger version's pretty good, but I'm going to want to target big stuff with it, but that smaller one, that's more the size of a MR-17, different action, and instead of two treble hooks, it has two single hooks.
And it closely resembles the size of the bait that is out there, because the bait in most of the areas isn't really big.
Right.
So sticking with those smaller sizes, I think, would be great.
And why was I going to the Yozuri 3D Fingerling, the AY, or the Balsa Extreme, and the one that looks exactly like a white bait? Because it has a lip on them. Those lures both have lips, where the mullet, the Rapala mullet, and the mirror lure MR-17 do not have lips on them. So the Balsa Extreme and the Yozuri, the 3D, those you can, as you reel them in or you go to pull it and twitch a little bit, pull it and twitch, it's swimming side to side. It helps give it action. It's going to assist you in catching the fish. Where when you go to the mirror lure or the mullet from Rapala, you have to do it all. They have no action whatsoever besides what you give them. So right. It's twitch, twitch, pull, snap, twitch. You've got to work it, figure out the cadence and the pattern. And a big part about it is making it stop. Same thing with the other two lures. But with the other two, the Balsa Extreme and the 3D Fingerling AY, they are wiggling as they move. So they're going to give you that little bit of extra help. So if you're not good with a twitching lure and you don't really understand how to use it, start with the Balsa Extreme or the Yozuri. If after you get used to twitching a lure, then switch up to the mirror lure or the Rapala mullet, because it is a different skill set.
Yeah. I mean, it's rub your belly, pat your head is how you've always taught it. You know, that's a bait that you might as well be throwing a stick if you don't work it right.
Right. If you just throw it out and reel it in, the mirror lure or the mullet, just going to come straight back in. You might catch that one fish that's got an IQ of 60. You know, compared to his buddies, let's say they had IQs of 35 normally. You know, we're just talking about one stupid fish may hit it, but it's not going to be a regular thing.
Right.
But speaking of really dumb fish that will hit anything shiny, moving fast, do you just go out and get it? And that fish would be, Robert, dumb fish for 400.
Spanish mackerel. They are everywhere. I mean, the numbers get thicker as you get from 41 Bridge in Punta Gorda, Port Charlotte, or the mouth of the Myakka. As you're working your way south towards Cape Hayes and Boca Grande Pass, the numbers are definitely getting bigger. But I've got people catching them at El Jobin off the pier. People have been catching them down by 41 Bridge and the power lines. You know, not great numbers, but good enough where they're actually targetable. And you control just a plain old silver spoon, or go out there and look for some of the schools of bait fish that are really pushing hard up on the surface and just start throwing that spoon through them and working it, because they're anywhere from 14 inches to, so far the biggest one this week I heard of was 22 inches. You know, and that was inside the harbor. The other ones that I've heard about in the pass and offshore have been anywhere from 13, 14 inches all the way up to, I think, 24 was the biggest one that I heard this week. I can't remember if that was this week or last week. But there's been some pretty nice Spanish around.
Good.
And to be this many up inside the harbor, I mean, we're so fortunate this year to have this much bait fish around that's why they're inside.
Is the cold front going to run them off?
I honestly don't know. It depends on how strong this front really is. Cold fronts
changes in a matter of minutes.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's the bait fish that are holding them in right now.
Well, mackerel like warm water.
Yeah.
The Spanish. Now, yeah. The kings like much cooler water, but the Spanish mackerel like a lot warmer water. But what can happen in the air in an hour can take 4 or 5 days to happen in the water.
Yeah, exactly. So it just depends on how windy it is and how how long it stays cold for, whether it'll push them out of here. It may shut them down for a day or two, but I honestly don't expect it to get rid of them yet.
It's actually going to have to stay below 70 day and night for 3 or 4 days for it to really drop the water temperature much.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, you need that water temperature to consistently be 76 degrees or cooler before they're going to leave in really big numbers. But it's got to stay there for several days. It dropping down to 76 for one day, and the next day it jumps back up to 78, they'll still be here.
Yeah, okay. Another comment I picked up from some of the guys on the L. Joe Bean Bridge, they said the mackerel this year look fatter. They're heavier fish for their size, so they must be doing really well on eating bait fish.
I think that's the amount of glass minnows we've had.
Yes.
They're glass minnows are, if you look them up, it's called a bay anchovy. But bay anchovies, we call them glass minnows because they're a tiny little minnow you can pretty much see through.
Yeah.
Are you a big bonnet shark guy? Shovel nose shark. Hammerhead shark.
Yeah. Shovel nose. We don't call them bonnets.
Yeah, or shovel nose. You big on those, RJ?
I enjoy catching them on light tackle.
They are, to me, one of the most fun sharks.
If you want to teach a kid to fish and get them hooked forever, take them out the first time with a light rig and get them a couple of bonnet sharks. Because number one, it puts up an incredible fight. And number two, you reel the shark in next to the...
And it's a hammerhead.
It's a hammerhead, yeah. it's a shovel nose, yeah.
Because they are a hammerhead, right?
Yes.
Well, they're in that family, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but they are a hammerhead. You can, you know, if it's a kid, call them a hammerhead. Mm. You know, or if it's a... You know, somebody from up north who's never caught a shark before, call it a shovel nose or a hammerhead. Don't tell them it's a bonnet shark.
Yeah.
You know, we know it's cool shark. The name is meaningless. But it's kind of like a boy named Sue.
Yeah, exactly right.
You know, it's the boy named Sue of sharks because here's this shark. Fights good. Hits good. I mean, readily. I mean, it's not uncommon. We had one of the guys in today. Or yesterday, and he got six of them in less than an hour over by Cape Hayes. And another guy was telling me he got some sharks over by the east side. So, and they eat shrimp. You can literally be trout fishing. And for every one you will catch on a piece of bait fish or cut bait fish, you will catch 8 dozen on shrimp, live or dead. They eat shrimp. It's what they do. I'm not saying that because I own a bait shop and I sell shrimp. I sell mullet and everything else too. But that's their primary diet. It's the reason I don't think I like the meat as much. I've eaten the bonnet sharks, and I think because of their diet of the shrimp, it has a different flavor, which I'm not a big shrimp eater. I don't really like lobster either.
Yeah, see, I like both of those, and I like how a shovel nose tastes.
The shovel nose would be like the ultimate eating shark because it has that flavors in it.
Yep.
And to me, I like the black tips because they don't have that flavor. And I know people that really don't like the black tips, but like you, love the bonnet sharks. You know, it's the difference in flavor. But you use 25-pound test fluorocarbon leader, a 2-aught, 3-aught, hook, circle, or J hook, and put a piece of shrimp on it. Now, they'll hit it under a bobber. They'll hit it just free lined out. However, your trout fishing will be good. If you're out there trying to catch a few trout, you're going to have a bycatch of bonnet sharks.
Well, and like you just said, you're catching them as bycatch while trout fishing. So, you know, the other great thing about this type of shark fishing is that you don't need giant, heavy, and really expensive fishing tackle for them.
Oh, it's a simple. You don't want anything. No, you want something as a 6 to 12 pound test rod.
Yeah, just your light trout rod, or even snook and redfish.
Bass rod would be a little heavy.
Yeah, snook, redfish, and bass tackle.
Casting rod for bass fishing would be heavier than I want to use on a bonnet shark.
Right. You know, so, and it's also a great learning shark as far as handling it, because they're fairly, you know, they can still bite you, they can still remove a finger, they can still cause stitches and all that stuff.
Don't get stupid.
But because of their small sizes, They're a little bit easier to deal with, so it's a great way to learn for when you're taking one off the hook or releasing
and
it,
and how to
whatever.
Grab them behind the head.
Right.
Now, here's the scenario. We get out on the flat. We throw a couple lines out with a shrimp, 25 to 40-pound test leader on them, 2-aught to 4-aught hook, a live shrimp or a chunk of dead shrimp. And then we just let the boat drift across the flat. But now remember, I want these baits out a ways from the boat. So once I make the cast, I'm going to leave the bail open. And if I have a rod holder, I set the rod in the holder and I pull 15 to 25 pulls of line off. I'm looking for that bait to be 60, 80 feet away from the boat. Because when you're drifting for them, the boat goes over the shark and scares them, and they're going to run away from the direction you're drifting, circle back outside around the boat, and come back to where they were, and that's when you want that shrimp to come there. So you don't want to be sitting there with the lines right next to the boat while you're drifting, because the boat's scaring all the fish off. So another way to do it is if you have a mushroom anchor. I like mushroom anchors. I also use a stick-it pin. I'll get up current or upwind, anchor, cast my lines out, wait about 8 to 10 minutes. If I don't get a fish, I pick my anchor up, whether it's the stick-it or the mushroom anchor, and I put it down again. Now, I'm not using a Danforth digging anchor with a chain. Too much to get up, too noisy to bring in and out. A mushroom anchor, easy. You pick it up, you set it on the side of the boat, you drift about 15 feet, you put the mushroom anchor back in. Stick it pin, you pull it up out of the bottom, you go about 15 feet, you stick it in again, and then my lines are still out because I didn't get all the way to my bobbers. And I'll have one line free line, one line on a bobber, and once I start hooking them, I'm going to hang out there until I can catch a few.
Well, that's a pretty good idea.
You know,
and the weird part is with those bonnet heads is you'll find that when they are out there on like the Cape Hayes flat or over there on the east wall, you'll go 200 yards and not see one. And then you'll see one, and in the next 100 yards, you'll see a half a dozen to a dozen. Now, they don't like swimming right next to each other, but they kind of like being in the same neighborhood.
They like being in that same area. They're socially antisocial. They don't want to be rubbing elbows with anybody, but they don't want to be on their own.
Right, exactly. So don't get discouraged when you're not seeing any, but as soon as you usually see one, there's going to be more in that general vicinity, and that's when you really start to concentrate your efforts of pulling and drifting just a little farther and then moving a little bit more, but being quiet about it and paying attention.
All right, but I'm big into the bonnet sharks. I love catch and releasing them. I don't need special tackle. But
you've taken my nephews out to catch them so many times, it's unbelievable. Right. I mean, they're just such a great, fun fish.
So we've actually hooked one. We set the hook. We had a J-hook. We reel it in. We get it right next to the boat. Now, once this fish is next to the boat, I take my right hand and I grab the leader, you know, 8 inches, 10 inches away, you know, towards the top of the leader, just away from where the fish is, the shark is, and I go to pick it up. Now, if I can easily pick that shark up with my right hand, and I'm doing this at the table, lifting my right hand up because you can see it so well through the microphone, and I'm lifting that up, I'm testing the weight. Now, once I know I can easily handle it, I take the leader in my left, or the leader's in my right hand, I lift the shark out of the water, and then with my left hand, I grab him by the dorsal fin. Now, I'm holding the dorsal fin between my thumb and my index finger. Now, I do that just to get myself kind of screwed up. You need, you know, the brass cojones, brass ovaries, because you're going to be Tarzan, you're grabbing a shark here. So you let go of the dorsal fin and grab them right behind the head. Your thumb on one side by the gills, your middle finger on the other side of its head, and now you're holding it. Once you control the head of that shark, it is not dangerous. But that's why we tested the weight with our right hand in the leader. If it's too heavy for you to pick up with your right hand easily, because your left hand, if you're right-handed, is 15% weaker. or 20%. So you want to make sure you can do this. And then you grab them by the dorsal fin with your thumb and your index finger and grab them by the back of the head. Just like you would a wayward child. You grab them right by the back of the neck and you can walk them along easy. So you've got the shark by the back of the head. Now you just take your pliers, pop the hook out, you know, admire them. Run your fingers from the head towards the tail, silky smooth. From the tail to the head, rougher than a cob. It's the coolest thing ever. So are we almost wrapped up? Am I running out of time? I got 2 minutes left. Okay, I'm not out of time. All right. What I like about this, I've got them by the head. I can control them. Some sharks, if you lay them upside down, pretend to go dormant. Don't trust it.
No, never
don't
trust that. Never trust that.
Everybody's number one rule of fishing, do not trust a shark.
No. I don't care what you
and
saw
a
on YouTube
you
or what
it.
Your buddy said, his right? cousin's mother said.
Right.
What was that?
And or a bluefish. Those are the two.
Bluefish,
those
yes.
are the two. In fact, the bluefish sees as well out of the water as he does in the water. So he sees that hand coming.
Yeah.
And he's just waiting.
So the most dangerous fish out there is a catfish. But sharks, you once you have them behind the head, it's very simple. There's nothing to hurt you. I just use my normal pliers, take the hook out. It's small enough I can control it. And that's the big thing. And they're fun to catch. It's amazing. You've got a hammerhead shark in your hand. It is cool enough. There's no way around it. Any last words, Robert?
No, you got the beautiful weather coming in and make it nice and chilly, so it'll be a nice change to go out and play with some different things.
Yeah, and I've heard of several good deals on hotels. So if the weather is getting a little crummy for you up there, you want to fly down. One of the hotels on Kings Highway was down like $60 a night. Somebody got one in Naples for like $100, and that's like half of what they normally are. So there's some good deals to be had right now if you want to come on down. RJ, say goodbye.
Goodbye, RJ.
Goodbye. Bye. Our feeders say. Hook, sinker, and line.